This is the European edition of Breaking Banks, the world's number one fintech podcast and radio show. We bring you the EU's unicorns, startups, founders, regulators, and leaders innovating the rapidly evolving fintech scene. A truly localized podcast with both English and local language content, with some of the world's most well-known hosts and influencers in the fintech sector today. Join us every week as we explore what makes the EU a phenomenal proving ground for many of the fastest growing fintech plays in the world. Okay, let's roll. Welcome to Breaking Banks Europe. This is our inaugural podcast of our spin-off of the number one fintech podcast and radio show in the world, Breaking Banks. We've assembled a rockstar team from around the European fintech environment to assist us with this. Starting off, we're going to introduce the executive producer of Breaking Banks Europe and one of the primary hosts, Matteo Rizzi from Fintech Stage. Many of you know Matteo.
Hey, hi guys. Brett, thank you for giving us this great opportunity to make the European voice heard as well. So there are many more estimated hosts with us. I would like to...
Let's bring them in. I think it's important we talk about why it is that we started this show. We had a lot of requests for European content on Breaking Banks and so forth. So Matteo and got our heads together. We started talking about this about 6 months ago. Finally, we've assembled a team. So Matteo, why don't you introduce everybody that's going to be the hosting?
Well, I think that each one of us will do a better job in saying a few words about themselves. I'll start with Megan and then Nina. I would say ladies first. Megan, over to you.
Great. Thank you, Matteo and Brett. It's an absolute honor to be part of this rock star crew. My name is Megan Johnson. I'm a British American stuck in Berlin. I have been in Europe for about 12 years now. My specialty lies in competitor benchmarking, customer experience, fintech and digital banking market analysis. For me, this is really important because, you know, having lived in Europe for so long and having looked at different markets, there's just so much to learn from what's happening in Europe, from Norway to Slovakia to Austria. While each market is quite different, you know, there's definitely some really exciting learnings that anyone can take away, regardless of market or stage you are in the space. So really excited to be involved.
Thank you, Megan. And then over to Nina.
Hey, everyone. So excited to be a part of this inaugural podcast episode of Breaking Banks Europe. A little bit about me. I am Nina Mohanty. I'm actually California born and raised and from the beast of the belly of Silicon Valley. And actually, quite apropos, left the Silicon Valley originally to run away from tech, but ended up finding a home in London, where I've dabbled with various challenger banks and some time at Askeem, and most recently was working at an open banking startup, and have now landed myself at Klarna, which is now the most valuable fintech in Europe. So I have, for a very long time, had a love for Europe and what's happening there in the tech scene. And I have constantly had to justify to my parents why I've chosen to create a life in Europe. And what is so great about Europe anyways. So over dinner conversations, I'll translate what I think is so great about Europe here.
I love it because I'm pretty sure that our auditors have started getting, the type of amazing team that we are putting together. So maybe let's over to the other Italian of the team, but is actually an Italian living in Germany?
I think they're talking about me, Paolo. I'm very... So basically, I'm the global fintech thought leader for IBM currently. I started my career in hell. I was doing risk management for banks. I went through the purgatory of startup entrepreneurship, trying to figure out what works and what doesn't work. And then I reached, the heights of artificial intelligence in my current role, trying to understand what can be done with the fintech innovation in terms of transforming the financial services industry. If I can say what I found, I basically found the human being. So I believe that means the biological underpinnings of finance. I try to understand all the time why digital can or can't work, because there are many misunderstandings around the fintech community and the banking industry. And this is also through a variety, I would say hundreds of thousands of conversations I had in the last 5 years around the globe to figure out which is the most interesting business model, how to plug it inside a different regulatory framework, because the world is not a common playing field. And then trying to also understand which is the best of the technology that you can use today in order to leverage your business model. I believe that Europe is a truly interesting fintech ecosystem because it's a very diverse marketplace, plenty of bright entrepreneurs and different ideas, and also because it possesses one of the most challenging regulatory environments. So I believe that if you can make it in Europe, you can make it everywhere.
Great, thank you, Paolo. So over to Mattias, and then I'll actually give a couple of intro of words of Spiros, who is not with us today. Mattias, please.
Ciao, Matteo. Hi, Brett. Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me. And I'm delighted to be here. I think it's overdue that we have a kind of European focus on that. After Brett kicked off years ago the global vision of breaking banks. To maybe introduce myself a bit, I'm the founder and former CEO of Fidor. And I'm in particular happy that now my, let me say, easygoing days are over. Finally, I have a reason again to work. No, that's joking. As I left Fidor in March this year, I think, you know, I'm really looking forward because that would now put me, us, you all together in the position of not being grilled by a moderator like Brett did this in the past with me talking about various topics. Now, I think we all...
Now you can do the grilling.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm really looking forward to be the chef of the barbecue now, not the beef. And this is really what I'm looking for. In particular, once I look to our group of people being engaged to that, rock stars, as you said it, being engaged to that, I think we have a lot of experience ourselves, which means we can go beyond the PR blah blah and the PR story. So I'm really looking forward to that. Thanks for having me.
Thank
We're
you.
We're delighted to have you on the team.
Indeed. Brett, do you want to say a couple of words about Spiros or I do it? He's the only one not being
Well, Spiros Megaris, of course. He runs Megaris Advisory. He's a big player in the private equity space, but also most of you will know that he's one of the most influential, you know, influencers in the fintech and AI space in Europe as well. So we're very glad to have him on board. He's got fintech investments in the European space. And so he can talk about that from a unique perspective, from a VC and private equity perspective. So we're really happy to have him on board as well. He wasn't able to join the first show this week, but he's going to be one of the hosts on a regular basis. So
indeed. And then, Brett, I realized as well that I didn't say a couple of words about myself because maybe it's not enough to say that we are dinosaurs or pioneers. And, you know, most of you know me for my boring but very active time at Swift with InnoTribe and sort of being there where fintech wasn't really a thing just yet, and then left Swift and InnoTribe in 2013, became an investor with several funds, including Omidyar Network, which is the founder of eBay. And now I built it together with my partner, Lazaro Campos, who used to be the CEO of Swift itself, this company called Fintech Stage, which is basically an innovation consulting, small boutique firm. And we help basically fintech ecosystems to get smarter with a focus as well in emerging markets. And the reason why I jumped directly on board when Brett basically share this new project with me and with the other host as well, is because, you know, indeed we organize a lot of sort of content-driven, you know, conferences and workshops around the planet, but having a space where we can continuously engaging, you know, the best and brightest, you know, having the opportunity to give the voice to the entrepreneurs, the investors, and all the stakeholders of the of the European ecosystem, and maybe in some cases in the local flavor. It is a little bit, Brett, if you allow me, the reason why we started InnoTry back then, right? So basically, fintech was only in London, Singapore, and New York. But actually, there is no part of the world and of the ecosystem not directly impacted by financial services, you know, be it emerging market or any country on the planet. And I think that this will give the opportunity to unveil plenty of entrepreneurs, opportunities, and ideas that are hidden or not so hidden in the different countries of our great Europe. So that's a little bit the, you know, the sort of the intro. We got this kick-ass team of hosts. Thank you, Brett, once again, to allow us to play in this playground. And why don't we start a little bit by what is so particular, what is so specific in Europe as an ecosystem at large, right? So Paolo mentioned very complex regulatory environment, but what else? Matthias, what do you think?
Yeah, well, Matthias, thank you. And coming back to Paolo's point, actually, I would say that there is no regulatory environment which is not complex. I at least have not seen any easy regulatory environment, if I may say it like that. And the complexity is always a very individual view, and also people living in a certain regulatory complexity are seeing their complexity the most complex, their regulation the most complex, because they maybe lack details of cross-border approaches on the other end. However, I think, out of my perspective, actually, Europe is clearly a very specific market. On the one side, all over the planet, we see very positive feedback when it comes to, for instance, initiatives regarding data protection, when it comes to initiatives like ESD2. In Asia, last time we discussed that in Singapore, everybody was very keen and curious to learn more how that is working out, what the customer perspective is, the benefits, and so on. On the other side, we are living in an environment which is driven by the interest rate and monetary policy of the ECB, which is a threat to banks in that sense of negative interest rates. High competition, extremely saturated markets, and depending on the region, I would say, and I mean mostly my German fellows, absolutely conservative when it comes to innovation, in particular digital innovation. So that's a kind of double whammy challenge on the other side, on the downside. And I think it was Nino saying in the beginning, if you can make it there in Europe, you can make it anywhere, picking up the phrase of Frankie Boy, but that's for sure true. It's a tough challenge to survive in the European market, in particular in retail, but it makes it fit for maybe reaching out into other areas. Would raise the question, how many of fintech concepts do operate on a cross-border solution? Klarna for sure is one, but there are not too many.
Indeed. And actually, what is also certainly super peculiar and characteristic of Europe is the fact that some of the largest fintech banks or neobanks of the planet are actually based here. I mean, and one could argue that the fact that there is this passporting license to be able to like cover the whole Europe, you know, by applying in a specific country could be a good driver. But why do you guys think that some among the largest neobanks are actually thriving here rather than, for example, in the US, or maybe Brazil is starting, but clearly that movement has started here. Megan, you wanna chip in?
Yeah, I think, you know, from my perspective, when I look at, you know, I mean, I know it's in the UK, but let's just, you know, we're still as UK citizens in Europe for the moment. So we'll consider kind of N26 and Monzo. And I think that what they've done in a sense is they've started off kind of catering to a particular niche. So when we look at Monzo, you know, they really focus on those tech savvy kind of Londonite. So, you know, really speaking to those customers and understanding where their pain points are in their current banking journey. And if you look at N26, so, you know, living in Berlin, we see N26 advertisements everywhere. But what's interesting about N26 is that I'm actually yet to meet a German person in Berlin who's not in fintech that actually uses N26. So from my perspective, I think that N26 is, you know, kind of going after expats and, you know, non-Germans that have moved to the big European cities because it's very easy for them to open up the bank account. You know, it's an English end-to-end application and then kind of going from there and then expanding. So I think that they've, you know, the successful neobanks have, they've started highly localized, but have gained that momentum to kind of, you know, spread into other countries and then take, you know, what makes a Portuguese kind of consumer different from a Spanish consumer, different from France, different from Germany. So I think that's definitely one of the success factors that we're seeing from the neobanks here.
Great. Paolo, I know you wanna jump in because I saw you giving some private comments. So please go ahead.
Actually, I wanted to put more flavor on my initial statements that if you can make it in Europe, you can make it everywhere. Because I would simplify, and I oversimplify the world into three macro areas. The United States of America is where technology, digital technology, was originally born. Yes, the Chinese are becoming very innovative, but largely speaking, let's say when the fintech movement started, it started from US-based technology. Europe is where typically regulation is born, and that's very important. This is important for Europe because we try to create a common place for the capital market union, but it's also important because you always need to figure out how to protect the final consumer in the very end. Because when things shift that fast, then you might end up into a corner if you didn't think about it before. So regulation can be a positive thing, can also be a negative thing. It depends on how you make that interpretation. But I believe that these days there is a great collaboration between regulators, the fintech ecosystem and the banks in order to see how progressive regulation can also influence the evolvement of technology and banking. But China is where the business model is born, largely speaking. That's why China is the fintech champion in the fintech revolution. Clearly, that could be done because there was not much regulation, but yes, you see there are places where regulatory framework are a bit looser than in other countries. But let's say that the Chinese experience is extremely interesting. Now, what I think we can do in Breaking Banks Europe is to figure out which are all of those business models that are popping up inside the European continent, given the variety of countries and frameworks where entrepreneurs work in order to give a voice, to feel more empowered to play a role outside their local system. Because Europe is definitely a greater interconnected continent, but it's also made of lot of little fishbowls that are in need of talking the one to the other. Now, if you think about the regulation, clearly last year was the perfect storm in terms of the regulatory framework. Europe was hit by the MiFID II protection of investors, which might trigger a transformation of the business model of banks in terms of relationship with final clients, so investment management and wealth management. It was hit by the PSD2, which is at the origin of a lot of open banking discussions that then saw the appearance of the challenger banks addressing basic needs of European millennials, the youth of Europe, that were engaging into different transactions and travel, right? So, yes, Europe is united, but when you go from Italy to Germany, then you have a different payment system somehow, right? So they are facilitating the capability of people moving around in Europe, which become part of the European mindset. And that's another reason why I believe that Europe started playing a very interesting role and a peculiar role on the fintech stage and is now expanding beyond Europe. We see the challenger banks moving into the US, and it's not the other way around. Typically so. And the last one, Matteo, I think you mentioned the data protection, or it was Matthias. I think this is also very important. I remember when I published my first book on innovation, the FinTech Innovation book by Wiley, And the first person that was putting a picture on LinkedIn was a German lady that at the time was studying at INSEAD in Singapore. And therefore, you know, we shared some comments on LinkedIn. And when she came to Frankfurt, because she's German in origin, we met for a coffee. What to think? And the conversation was interesting. She said, you see, when I'm in Asia, I think I can do so much because nobody's asking about data protection. While when I'm in Germany, especially in Europe, I have so many constraints. And I believe that this will give a disadvantage to Europe compared to the rest of the world. Now, fast forward a few years, you see what happened with Cambridge Analytics and Facebook. You see how the misconceived business model on data can fire up the business model in the very end. So I do believe that Europe is providing the fintech and the banks a more consistent playground for them to make sure that they innovate and innovate towards stable innovation, not just an initial disruption that doesn't go far enough.
I love the fact that we are only at episode number one, and I think that we can all agree that Paolo already earned the surname the professor, you know, amongst all of us. So as of now, Paolo, you know, when I'm going to call you in, I'll actually pay you that respect before your next intervention. Indeed, Professor Paolo. So, Nina, you know, you're still in the U.S. Technically, but you have seen indeed the counter invasion from Europe of these digital banks trying to make their way on the other side of the ocean. You know, what's your view of this? Also, because you're technically the most millennial of all of us, right? So you should be sort of the coolest kid for which these banks are making so much effort to win.
I'm always happy to be the token millennial in the conversation and try to be hip with the kids. So yes, I am American. I actually, my interactions with fintech were predominantly European before coming back to the States. And I'll remind you, in the States, we're still using checkbooks. So if we want to start there and where we are with payments to begin with, I mean, the infrastructure that the European Union has, that it's building out, is just, well, topped only by Asia, I suppose. But I think for me, what excites me about Europe in general is looking at it from more of a sociological standpoint. As a Londoner myself, I used to love that, you know, you could have breakfast at the FCA, you could have lunch in Canary Wharf, and then have a pizza and beer in Shoreditch with some sort of up-and-coming fintech all in one day. And so that proximity and the closeness of everything that's in Europe, whether that's London, Berlin, Paris, wherever you are, there's just so much going on. I think what's also interesting, though, is the demographics that we are looking to cater for in the European Union. So according to the WealthX billionaire census, there are 55 billionaires in France, 91 billionaires in Switzerland, 97 billionaires in the UK, and 146 billionaires in Germany. But conversely, we also have, according to the Borgen Project, 180 million Europeans at risk of poverty or social inclusion, according to the Borgen Project. So what that tells me then, from a sociological standpoint, is that we have such a wide swath of people that are in need of different financial services. So whether that is tackling high net worth individuals and building products for them, or financial inclusion and building products that bring people into the fold, or even targeting, as many of those hipster London startups like to do, that really comfortable Henry, high earners, not rich yet. There's just a huge market available for everyone. And then finally, I know a lot of the hosts have already discussed this, but from a regulatory standpoint, as an American looking over, we just have a lot to be proud of in the European Union. Whether that is the European Commission really taking charge with PSD2 and GDPR, and while it is the bane of our existence with mailing lists, there you see an active responsibility for our regulators to really take into consideration things like privacy, data exchange, and with PSD2, even thinking about competition. But then on the other end, we have, you know, governors of the Bank of England, like Mark Carney, saying, setting up things like recently his speech at the UN Climate Summit, trying to set up a sustainable financial system. So what we see is these regulatory bodies or these really large institutions that are part of this ecosystem really grappling with the very real realities of the times that we live in. So I think all of these things put together, as I may be a bit of the romantic sociologist of the group, really form a really interesting ecosystem for us to be playing in.
I love the fact that each one of us is sort of cutting his own very peculiar space, and I love the mix of personalities here. I think we're going to have fun. So guys, it's about time to get a short break. Be back with us in a couple of minutes, because we're going to talk about the most interesting fintechs in Europe, as well as what's the status of what it's like to be an entrepreneur, in Europe, and what are the different flavors? Because amongst the five of us, we can pretty much talk about a dozen of countries, because we all have experiences, lived experiences in many of them. Off to a short break. Talk to you in a minute. Welcome back to episode one of Breaking Banks Europe. So we're going to talk about a couple of topics. The first one, what in your opinion are the best fintechs that we have seen in the European landscape? We talked about sort of the usual suspects, the number 26 and the Revolut and the Klarna, of course, but what would be your couple of best picks if you had to choose one or two? Maybe Matthias, starting with you.
Yeah, I was afraid, Matteo, that you jump on me straight away. I would find it really hard to give a kind of number one to a list. Let me say, I'm very much, personally, I have to say, I'm very much in favor for B2B concepts, because of B2B concepts, actually, it would really addressing a pain point to a B2B partner is a company that potentially makes significant revenues at a certain point, which I'm totally lacking in B2B concepts. And showcases that have been mentioned during the first part of our show here. With B2B, we really have the opportunities to improve processes and services and product and to deliver a lot of value add to the customers at the end of the day. So to the retail customers of such a partner. One example, I most recently invested into a company which is supporting banks by doing collection processes with AI, and with that actually supporting them to have a better loan origination decision with their customers, and even being more of a service than a pain to those customers. And this is why I invested in them. So that is currently my focus, I would say.
Actually, Matthias, I think that I did a great thing in asking you first, because you just made me think that a better question than actually start naming names is actually talking about trends, right? And by the way, if you ask me, because after all, I'm also one of the hosts, so I'll try not just to be the sort of the microphone giver, sort of saying, I would agree with you that no one has really cracked just yet the B2B angle, whether it is in digital services in general, which is why also, although many of these digital giants are targeting, at the cost of not being profitable, of course, the retail customers, yeah. But there are actually plenty of neo-digital services, that are addressing now both SMEs and large corporates. Yeah. And by the way, also at the very interesting valuation, I'm talking about, you know, cash and liquidity management, forecasting for large corporates, and also a sort of a one-stop shop for SMEs, digital services, which I find extremely interesting if I put my hat of an investor. So let's talk about trends instead of give names. I think it's actually, you know, much more compelling for this discussion. So I would align with you, Matthias, in saying that the B2B looks actually really, really interesting. Megan. Sorry, go ahead, Matthias.
No, I want to definitely leave the space for Megan, I'm sorry. However, the trends would also then include for me going into that direction of really tokenization, digital currencies, and living at the crossroad of digital currencies and fiat currencies and services. So that is another trend I do strongly see on the market. We will see where it ends up. However, I would say we will see a definite change coming up from this kind of, doesn't matter how much it costs, we all have millions of customers, no matter how less or much of revenues they do. As the FT mentioned, like in 2030, 50% of the customers will be with Neo and Challenger banks. However, only 0% of the revenues. And we shouldn't forget about that, right? So,
yeah.
Over.
Indeed. Megan, please jump in.
Yeah, so from my perspective, I think from the end user perspective, and something that I've noticed kind of as an American living in Europe is that people here and society in general definitely tends to focus more on sustainability, whether that be from the environmental perspective or from how they go about kind of their day-to-day purchases. I think one thing we're seeing and what will really be exacerbated in the coming years is kind of new banks, fintechs, and kind of existing solutions that focus on, you know, sustainability. So one which really stands out for me is a neobank coming out of Hamburg called Tomorrow, and they position themselves as the sustainable bank account for your smartphone. So what they do is they have a cashback program where, you know, extra spending is put towards renewable energy, organic agriculture, and microcredit projects, particularly in Brazil, other parts of the planet. And, you know, I work quite a bit with a few banks and fintechs in Scandinavia, particularly in Norway and in Sweden. You know, this whole idea of sustainability and climate change, it's not even a question for them. And some of the banks that I'm working with are actually kind of questioning, you know, are consumers going to start spending differently, where, you know, rather than purchasing clothes quite frequently at an H&M, you know, kind of a one-off larger purchase at a more, you know, local shop or something. So I think, you know, the way people are spending and the values they have, we could potentially see that, you know, with the next wave of Challenger banks. But I think that also this kind of trend for really coming up with niche neobanks and kind of fintechs, and kind of another example of a niche bank, not so much in the sustainability area, but definitely in the value space. So one kind of bank in Germany is called Insha Bank, and it's a partnership between Solaris and a bank coming out of Bahrain. And it's a bank built for the Muslim population in Germany that abides by Islamic banking fundamentals. So kind of the sustainability and building banks and having solutions and services that really cater to, you know, the changing and different values of people here.
Yeah, the North Europe are really like in another galaxy when we talk about sustainability. I actually, you know, probably help me to remember which country we are talking about. I think it was Sweden, and they were saying that they are so like zero full. They are actually fully recycling, all their trashes. They're actually starting importing trash from the rest of the Europe because they are so good in using it to the profit of the renewable energy and to the environment that are actually, you know, I think it was Sweden, right, Megan?
Yep. Yeah. And I mean, you know, for people and for consumers in the Scandinavian markets, it's important to go to places that, you know, don't waste food. So being able to identify, you know, which place has a good policy with, you know, food wastage and everything. And I think kind of, I mean, one point, it's a bit of a side point, but what's also very fascinating about Scandinavia is, and this has kind of been a historical fact about them, is that the banks are very open to collaboration and partnerships. You know, and I think that's definitely exemplified with the P27 initiative. So kind of this cross-Scandinavian payment kind of project that's set to go live. So I think, you know, speaking about Scandinavia in particular, definitely a lot to learn from different facets.
Great. So over to Paolo, because I know what is at your heart. So what do you see happening? And I know that you know, I challenge you not to name any of your books this time in your intervention.
So you see, I guess that the biggest battle which is happening these days and is becoming more and more apparent is a battle between volume versus value, which is the B2C versus the B2B. We said before that China is the champion of fintech because it's a volume marketplace. So the B2C configuration can be effectively succeeded and is dominant. The United States of America, with 330 million people, is a fairly volume marketplace, even though it shifted gradually from initial B2C towards a B2B model. But Europe is peculiar because in Europe, there are 700 million people, of which 500 million are part of the European Union. However, all of these people live in very fragmented countries that don't necessarily connect the one to the other, so that when the fintech start, they may have a harder time than anywhere else on the planet to scale up in order to achieve a volume dimension that makes them sustainable. So that is the reason why I believe that there will be more value-related fintech offers in Europe than anywhere else, because it's more complex for them to compete on the value mantra that the Silicon Valley venture capitalists have been preaching for the last 5 to 7 years, which to me has also negatively affected some of the fintech plays. In this value type of proposition, I believe and concur with you, Matteo, that the SME market will be the most interesting, because SME has been a neglected segment in the starting years of the fintech revolution. Even though you know that the SME's clients should be more receptive than any other client to accept a digital offer, because entrepreneurs have a clear understanding of their pain points. And therefore, when you reach out to them in a disintermediated way, they should be more capable than anybody else compared to the general public to onboard on a fintech digital solution. However, the fragmentation of the SME market itself doesn't make it that simple to crack the code to make sure that you can build and then you can scale sufficiently large to export your model to a different European country. But I believe that we see more and more offers in this market space, and this is one of those segments of the fintech revolution that I'm looking more closely at, because I believe that there will be interesting offers coming out anytime soon.
And by the way, of course, I think that we all agree to the fact that we keep saying fintech, but you know, this show and actually our conversations will be of course much broader, right? So implicitly, we already talked about RegTech. We know that Spiros is particularly involved in the insurtech space. And actually, to that purpose, I also want to throw something in the mix, which is the fact that actually fintech becomes almost a commodity now, especially in certain businesses. And say, for example, think of the what we call the prop tech, right? So the market that it's a crossover of, you know, real estate and financial services. Or, for example, pension tech, right? So, you know, Europe is scattered, but it's also scattered in the way that people think about their life after you know, their working life, right? So the retirement space. So these are all like new areas of development that requires a fintech capabilities or an aspect of innovation that a fintech can bring. But we are talking about historically very heavy and traditional businesses. And I think that this sort of marriage in between the old and the new is where the next frontier of what we used to call fintech is going. Of course, you know, we all keep talking about fintech, but this show is going to be much more than fintech, right? So we implicitly talked about RegTech with all the regulation aspect. You know, Spiros Margaris is not with us today, but is a real specialist in the whole insurtech space, which is also catching up much faster than the fintech in renovating the insurance industry. But there are also many new frontiers where fintech plays a role in disrupting a very traditional business, such as, for example, the business of real estate. You know, there is this, I call it a trend, but it's not a trend, it's a fact. There is even a label, it's called PropTech, right? So fintech coming to disrupt the real estate business. Or pension tech, you know, the whole retirement space, which is, by the way, very different from, you know, one country to another here in Europe, you know, very traditional sort of and legacy system type of business that now needs technology such as AI, for example, such as AI, to actually be able to cope and tailor in a better way how people are going to live, you know, once they stop working. So would you agree, guys, that fintech almost become a commodity? You know, we've been talking about fintech for now 10 years, and it's about time to talk about innovation in financial services at a much larger pace. Mattia, what would you think?
Oh, Mattia, I would say absolutely right in your observation. And not only that, we speak about fintech for 10 years now, and actually, we would need to ask ourselves whether we would be kind of satisfied with what we achieved in our scalability or disruptional ambitions. And I would really question that. I would say that, of course, technological development on the one end and customer behavior on the other end is clearly driving in all areas of financial services. And we see that, don't we? We see that in particular with AI coming along, that will be fueling that development. Tokenization will fuel that development. I would say tokenization is a big topic, actually, when we speak about real estate business in its very broad and general meaning. Just one part of it. And therefore, I really would say, yes, we will see that sooner or later, it not only will be, it shall be and will be the case that all kinds of financial services will be integrated, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, I would call now Paolo in, because I know that you have been working a lot in actually more than one country, which makes your experience super interesting. When we talk about like the retirement industry, right? So, you know, what's your view on this?
Well, you see, I typically use the definition fintech in a very loose sense to identify the transformation of finance and banking through technology. But definitely we've been seeing a lot of innovation in more specific fields like the pension tech, the credit tech, the insurance tech, and so on and so forth. I just came back from a very large event on the retirement system that was hosted here in Europe. And that is where I believe we see a lot of interesting propositions that will be capable of aggregating back a lot of the different fintech in the general sense solutions onto a consistent planning solution. So let me say, I think that the fintech community made a little mistake in the past in dividing too much clearly the different solutions, because the next trend will be to bundle back onto a single proposition for the client the variety of issues that an individual needs to resolve. If you think about personal finance, definitely the most complex and the most engaging is the one of pension tech. But you cannot do that without taking into consideration what people need for the next year, the next couple of years. Therefore, you will see a convergence between pension tech and wealth tech to define a planning mechanism that services 360 the need of an individual and its family. In a sense, we are going towards the client tech type of approach. So the bundling back of all of these offers onto a platform that services a client, 360 being an SME or a family.
Yeah, and actually, you know, there is also another aspect, which is you named it before. You mentioned GDPR. So Europe is today, no question about it, the role model about, you know, having a broad legislation about data privacy. And this also gave an immense opportunity for entrepreneurs in a digital identity space and the treatment of data and privacy space to actually build solutions that are actually directly monetizing customer data, but at the same time protecting their privacy. Megan, I know you have been doing some work in this space. You want to jump in?
Yeah, I mean, I think this whole the whole data identity, there's so many different facets to it. But you know, I think that one aspect that is also quite unique, I think, to Europeans compared to Americans and, you know, people from other parts of the world, is there is a greater, you know, awareness and concern with how personal data is used. And, you know, a lot of the banks that I work with are kind of, you know, struggling between keeping customers' data safe, but also, you know, being in a position to monetize this. And there's I've done a lot of work looking at kind of decentralized data marketplaces and initiatives that are looking to, you know, put the data back into the hands of consumers. And I think that one interesting potential with open banking is, you know, as a consumer, if I want to, you know, share what my salary payment is to confirm, you know, my income and employment status when I want to, you know, rent a house or, you know, buy a house or something, being able to tap into my financial data. So a service that's, you know, utilizing open banking to prove my identity in this space, I think it just is, you know, another example of how, you know, financial data is going to become more prevalent, you know, in who we are as an individual.
Great. So I see Nina is back. You know, she was caught up in, because this is, of course, semi-live. So she was caught up in a short call. But, you know, I'm glad she's now back with us. And you have been following it. This is actually, we are all learning how to produce this show, and you know, it's like learning a new job. I don't know about you guys, but I feel I'm actually having fun. Nina, we were talking about you know, fintech crossing over several other industries. You know, we talk about real estate. Megan just mentioned data and privacy. Paolo mentioned, you know, the pensions, the retirement landscape. You know, what's your view? You know, you are actually a specialist in a capability which I find particularly boring. You know, like the payments one. And do you see still space for innovation, and which kind of trends do you see in terms of, you know, as far as payments are concerned in Europe?
Well, Matteo, I'll have to respectfully disagree and tell you that I find payments incredibly sexy.
That's okay. That's diversity, isn't it?
In yeah. It's great. but I think, you know, jokes aside, I'm going to kind of move eastward from the US. We're still, as I mentioned in our introduction, still using checkbooks. I mean, the issues that are going on with the automated clearinghouse and the new clearinghouse are just a migraine. And as we move east over to Europe, things improve. I know many of the hosts here were at SWIFT or at Sibos and probably got to do a lot of interactive stuff with SWIFT GPI. Faster payments in the UK have really taken off and are running at breakneck speed. And then again, if we go further east, we just are just sitting there with our jaws wide open, looking at what's going on in China. I think talking about maybe bringing some of what we do at Klarna in and crossing over into different industries, as you have been discussing for the past segment, what's really interesting to me is how fintech and payments and open banking will overlap with the retail industry and how we shop and buy things in the future. We see a lot of cool things going on with Amazon Go, for example, but I think what is really interesting is, as Megan mentioned earlier, open banking and how that's going to propel us forward with the data, the value that lies underneath all of that transactional data to really understand customers in a way that is quite frankly a bit frightening. Knowing exactly if we can get down to basket level data of what kind of jeans you prefer or what kind of wine I'm picking up at Tesco on a Friday night. These things all aggregated create a really interesting picture, which then also leads to what Megan commented earlier on data privacy. But I think watching that space and how we will use all of this open data and transactional data will be really interesting moving forward, especially in Europe.
I have to admit, Nina, that you made the topic of payments slightly, you know, less boring than what I had in mind. So, you know, I have to give you that.
I do what so I can.
It's about time to wrap up, guys. And, you know, when Brett asked me, you know, who we could bring as, you know, a star guest for our first show, I said, you know, Brett, let me politely disagree. I think that all of the hosts of Breaking Bank Europe would be superstar speakers in any conference. So it would be really hard to top this up and calling someone specifically. So let's run the first show, you know, amongst ourselves, also to get comfy about the way that the conversation runs. But I think that we all agree that we're going to have fun. So I would wrap this up and maybe let's do the following. Paolo, Matthias, Nina, and Megan, one word, and then back to me and we wrap up. Paolo.
I love Europe FinTech. That's why I'm here.
Matthias.
So many things to do, still to be created, so much to talk about.
Megan.
So much to share and inspire everyone in and outside of Europe.
Nina.
Onwards and upwards, my friends.
That's great. So it's a wrap. Thank you for listening to the episode 1 of Breaking Banks Europe. See you at the next show.
Thanks for listening to Breaking Banks Europe, a Provoke Media podcast in cooperation with FinTech Stage. Don't forget to tweet us out, shout out, or post to the team at Breaking Banks EU on Twitter. If there's something or someone you'd like to hear on our cast, let us know. See you next week on Breaking Banks Europe.